Yes, it can be scary when all the things that you believe, you suddenly come to not believe them anymore. But in many ways, that is the return back to the authentic you, the uncluttered you, away from the fake you that was given so much misinformation, to return to the uncluttered you, which has more of the real information. And at that point, you do need a sophistication and a certain sort of stoic force of will to drive you forward, just as Neo did in the film to drive him forward. One could say it's the loss of innocence. Innocence is beautiful, but there's a day when all of humanity will have to grow up. And as you embark upon your own journey, you will become much more sophisticated. For example, when people hear something they don't like, they prickle and get angry. If you're a sophisticated person, you can listen to all sorts of theories that you don't necessarily agree with without reacting. For example, I went to a lecture the other night with a famous scientist who talked for an hour and 15 minutes about the Big Bang. I don't personally believe in the Big Bang, but I wasn't up for having a fight with a lecturer. I was really interested to hear why he believed in the Big Bang, and what his methodology was, and what his science was, and his reasons for believing in it. And you may well disagree with some of the things that I've been saying, but a sophistication of self allows you to listen. Because in the end, many of the things you do believe today, once you go down this path through the hidden door that I've been speaking of, you will realize that they were just encumbrances that you took on, that you borrowed from other people, books, various dogma of one kind or another. So, for example, you may be able to relate to times when you have suffered a loss of innocence, when you've discovered that your boyfriend or your partner has been unfaithful to you, or the day that you had to straighten up and go take your driving test, and so on. These are all moments on the path where you have to become a grown-up, a real being. And very much this journey beyond enlightenment requires you to develop a metaphysical, spiritual, and psychological maturity. But in that maturity, you can't beat yourself up. You can't decry the situation, because we have incarnated, as I said in the third liberation, into a world that is unjust. And there are all sorts of hidden forces that are hindering you, especially when you want to do something that's holy and good. But some of those forces that you think are outside of you that are hindering you are in fact manifestations of you hindering yourself. Etheric beings in a parallel evolution that blip in and out of this one might seem jolly unlikely, but you may be familiar with the work of Jose Escamilla, the Hispanic-American researcher who has photographed an etheric being he calls a flying rod. There are some photos of them in the CD-ROM that accompanies this series. The flying rods are anywhere from a few inches long to 50 feet in length. They are fins that oscillate along their translucent etheric bodies, and they fly through the air at speeds of thousands of miles an hour. They also exist underwater. They've probably always been here. They are part of the beings that are in the outer matrix. Escamilla discovered the flying rods by accident when his video camera was left on one day. While editing his film, he noticed the strange flying rods zip into the frame, turn, and then fly out again, all in the space of a few frames. Jose Escamilla is real cool and innovative. You can find his work on www.roswellrods.com. A friend of mine called Ralph Miller runs a sacred temple in Brazil known as Heart of the Initiate, where they perform shamanistic ceremonies with a sacred brew found in the Amazon. Ralph told me that during the session at his temples, celestial beings frequently appear. They seem to dance and move about between the participants, healing people. A friend of mine had a long-term injury in her hip from being a ballet dancer, and she told me that on her third temple journey, a group of women came to her from another world, dressed with headscarves, and they placed long golden needles in her hip, and they also had certain herbal remedies with them that came from that inner space. And when she came out of the session many hours later, her hip was healed, and it has never troubled her since. That was 4 years ago. Medicine will go to another place soon. Healing the etheric body might be a major advance in unknowing. In all the mayhem of our world, the final redemption and healing is also here. The rescue is underway. Using the Matrix film as an analogy, you could say that Zion is the world of humans, and the squiddies that attack the humans are the flying ghouls and the etheric beings in the outer Matrix. And Mr. Smith and his agents, devoid of warmth, are the discarnate beings of the inner Matrix. They are programs inside the inner Matrix. The beings of the inner Matrix are inside the human mind, so they can morph into anyone, just as Mr. Smith can in the film. When they see your insecurity come up from within you as a wave pattern, and if that is seen to frighten you, then they come flying in seconds to strike you emotionally and push you toward rack and ruin. Initially, Jung described the collective unconscious, and so he said that humanity was linked by archetypal symbols, so we all understand mother, father, life, death, joy, happiness, morning, night. You know, these are things that are common to all humanity. But what he didn't understand was that this collective unconscious is actually a place. It's a dimension that is just as real as our physical dimension. And that is through this hidden door that I'm talking about. It's a place. In that place, there's an alternative you, a mirror you, that looks exactly and precisely the way you look. And that mirror you contains all your feelings and the memories in your subconscious mind. So your subconscious mind and your mirror you are one and the same. And the mirror you, in effect, is your soul, because your brain cannot contain the perpetual memory of you after death. At the moment of death, the brain ceases. So without a mirror you, where all of your feelings and memories are stored, there would be no perpetual memory of you. If there wasn't a mirror you, an alternative you in another dimension, there would be no eternal life, no life after death. Because everybody would go through all these trials and tribulations and lessons, their brain would stop, and the whole book would be burnt, so to speak. So it'd be like this incredible sacred text, and somebody's burnt the bloody thing at the end of 82 years. So it was all worthless. We can't remember what Harry did or why he did it, and he can't remember. So the mirror you in this other world exists to remember who you are after death. The mirror world contains everybody. Because the strangest thing is that we're all in the mirror world right now. So if there's 6 billion humans here, there are 6 billion souls in the mirror world right now. Imagine it as this vast dimension where it's as big as the planet Earth, if not bigger. Because the mirror world also includes all the identities of people that died last week and last year and 100 years ago, probably. So it's vast. It has the souls of the dead and the souls of those people that are alive. So the people that are alive are in the afterlife already, which is very strange to understand. And spirits evolve there in that mirror world, and you are in there as well, even now while you are alive. It's the afterlife and this life at the same time, concurrently. And that mirror image of you, sometimes known as the doppelganger, can operate in the mirror world without permission of your waking mind. It is as if your subconscious goes walkabout, without your intellect having a say in what it is doing or where it goes. It is operating 24/7, regardless of whether you are awake or asleep. It's back to the idea of the authentic you, because the mirror self is the real you, and the intellect is not the real you. It's just a concoction of ideas and opinions, programs you inherited. The mirror self is your real identity, and it is what you actually believe and feel about life, not what you pretend to believe. It's a construct of your innermost feelings. First you look at it, then you decide to change it. Just knowing it and admitting to it is a huge step forward. Most people deny any knowledge of it. That leaves them vulnerable to the dark energies. But that is childlike and unsophisticated. The only safety is to look at the dark and see it as beautiful and transmute it. There's enormous power inside your darkness, and with it you can resolve the authentic you and fuse it to the power of the physical, intellectual, emotional you that you operate from here on Earth. You can use this knowledge to unlock the Matrix and escape. But it involves going the other way. Almost everything is backwards. It's endarkment, really, the secret to everything. When I tell people they have to go the other way and embrace their shadow, they get edgy or they don't believe me. But the dark, in effect, is not really dark at all. It is just stored pain or ancient pain, the sins of the father or mother that you inherited from hundreds of years ago. There is a heroic beauty to it if you can resolve it. and then you can save others from going the wrong way. Maybe they don't have to go through the pain of the cluster as you broke it for them. And while the ancient pain may have hurt you at times, it will now turn and empower you. It's your sword across the dark lands. Once you love it and you're not scared of it, and you can embrace it. The stored pain within you is beautiful. Start to tell yourself that. It was a learned response, a karma, an attitude you took that maybe didn't work, just a spiritual lesson. Once you're not scared of the dark, you are free. Here's a shadow exercise to test yourself. Sit in a bar or a restaurant, a place where people go and relax and have a drink, and watch people come and go. Watch as the inner you responds in your mind. Listen to the way the inner mind talks to you, responding to the stimulus of the people coming and going. Watch where your mind goes and the kinds of things you concentrate on when you allow your subconscious impulses to come forward. Watch what conclusions you come to about others. See how your intellect translates those pulses into a story, one that you tell yourself about a person you are watching. In effect, you are watching them while noticing the impulses coming from within you. Your inner self will go for their stored pain, especially any stored pain that looks the same as the pain in you. So watch as it judges people without knowing anything about them. Watch how you may silently react and growl if a person comes in that you don't like. Maybe they're wearing clothes that you don't agree with. Maybe that talks to you of a childhood fear. Or maybe it's the pain of early rejection. You reject the person you are watching because you've experienced rejection as a child. If an overweight old man comes in with a pretty young girl on his arm and she's in a short dress, you may react against them, deciding he's a dirty old man and she's a little gold digger. Of course, you don't know the facts. He may be her uncle. But in watching the inner you, you see how it decides from stored pain. You might be jealous the girl is not with you. The stored pain of all the girls that ever turned you down is manifest, projected, if you like, towards the old man walking in the door, who may be the sweetest, kindest man in the world. But you will wallpaper him in your pain, and that is how the pulses of the subconscious affect your imprint on the world. It's painted to look like the pain we suffered. Soon you will see if you are human and warm in your heart, or are you just a cold reptilian predator of humanity, a Mr. Smith in disguise. And as the girl in the red dress came through the door, did you look at the flowers she was carrying, or was your subconscious attention pulled to her sexually? And of course, the girl in the short dress is responding to her impulses and urges, maybe using sex to entice people, or maybe she just seeks attention. Perhaps it's a money thing. She needs admirers to pay for her to have a good time. And then the ones that lust after her are in their shadow as human predators. They probably don't respect her as a woman or care for her soul. They just want her, sexually. As said, we project pain on others through the etheric imprint we make. And those pulses may be driven by sexual desire, preference, snobbery, hate, affection, greed, indolence, and the desire for an easy ride. They are driven by endless factors that make up the inner you. Sometimes the stored pain is manifested as inverted snobbery. That is when people that are socially or economically disadvantaged feel better than or more special than rich people, and so they hate high achievers. It's the angry revolutionary who detests the upper class because he or she is not included in the upper class. It's the communist proletariat rising to kill the Tsar because they admire the Tsar and they want to be like the Tsar. Inverted snobbery is the feeling of being superior to the systems or to the people that reject you. It's very common in churches and spiritual groups. The weird thing is it's all backwards. The people and the things you pretend to hate are those hidden parts of you that you are secretly in love with or that you desire. Love is a form of concentration. Romantic love is concentrating on one person to the exclusion of others. To detest someone, you have to concentrate on them, projecting thoughts towards them. Usually the person you detest has something you admire or want, something that will help you understand your stored pain. Funny, eh? Why do people silently say no without necessarily knowing why they're rejecting you? Maybe you scare them with your unresolved pain. Do you repel them? Do you know? Maybe your weakness irritates them. Maybe you're too needy. It's a shadow trait to lean on others for financial and emotional support. Maybe you're too slimy. The hidden predator leaks out. Maybe you're sneaky and loose with the truth. Maybe people instantly distrust you. Maybe they think you're after their money, and maybe deep down they're right. Maybe there's a host of darkness following you, riding your pain, ready to jump across from you to others. And maybe you're traveling about with the dark circus from the inner matrix, a victim of your own stored pain without ever knowing it. So that hidden darkness is there at every turn to make sure you don't get what you want. People believe in luck, and sometimes they think they are accident prone. But that is the simplistic explanation. Mostly, they have dark energies all around them. The first defense, of course, is to have strong yang sentiments and go in the opposite direction. It's towards the goddess, the divine mother. That starts in the imprint of your etheric energy. So your protection lies in understanding how you project your stored pain on others. It's a complicated subject, but once you know about it, you can teach yourself and it will change your life and empower you. You start to break away from the matrix. It's all about how you touch the world with your mind and how you breathe on them. And it's how you see everything and imprint everything to an invisible higher love. Your pain is sorted and understood in the context of your life, and it's past now. And now you're looking to serve, to help others while they sort through their stored pain. Let's go to the next session, and I'll talk to you about your role as a magical healer.